to have you in the house while I get to worship God this morning. If you'll turn your Bibles with me to Mark, the 8th chapter. I'm going to be here for a couple weeks, if it's okay. This story is a story I've probably taught more than one time. I know over 16, 18, 20-something years of preaching, I've probably preached it more than twice. It's just a very simple story in the Bible, but it is one of the most dynamic stories because it is different. It shows more than most. Just this one little story shows more than most stories. There's a lot of times that God does things and does miracles, and you'll hear it says, well, Jesus laid hands on him and his body was healed. Da, da, da. And you're like, okay, who was he? And tell me about it. And tell me. But it doesn't say anything. And then other times it talks about more. And this is one of those stories that really goes in depth to explain change. Look at the person beside you and say, change. I'm going to be speaking for the next 2 weeks on being changed. And so in this story, it reminds me a lot of me in the last, well, I guess right as the time I moved here when I was brokering in business. Business is all about finding a way to make someone see something the way you see it. That's business. It doesn't matter if you put something on the outside of a snow cone stand and you fix it up and design it so that it catches the eye and somebody says, I bet they make good snow cones. It doesn't matter what it is. I've done snow cone stands. I've done everything. And I used to sell Kool-Aid. I represented the Kool-Aid brand as one of my companies. I over 70-something stores, and you'd have to sell $50,000 racks to these grocery stores and $17,000 racks to stores. And we'd sell over $1 million just in Mississippi on just Kool-Aid. And so that was my job, to go in, sit down with the manager, and try to convince him he needed to spend $20,000 on a big Kool-Aid stand to sit right there in the middle of his store. And he would say, I need a little one. I said, no, this is what you need. We need to talk. Let's go to lunch. Let's discuss this thing. I need you to see it the way I see it. And so in the process, it is a business transaction. And at the end of the business transaction, you have received something that is beneficial to you. How do you know that? Because the next year when I came back, it became easier. I didn't even have to ask anymore. I would come in, I'd say, it's Kool-Aid time. Hey man, put me down for another one of those. Why? Because here's the deal. He has money. See, I knew most of these guys have money. If they own the grocery store, they got money stashed away somewhere. And here's the thing. If they're investment. Let's say they've got it in a savings account. We're just talking business. Is that okay if we just talk business? They got it in a savings account. And in that savings account, it's drawing about 5% interest. Okay, not at least it's making some money. Well, see, I walked in and I said, look, in 4 months, you'll sell out during the summer this whole thing. You make 17% interest. How much do you say, Tim? I said 17%. Now, you count that there are going to be a few kids stick a few packs in their pocket and you're going to lose a few. So let's just say it drops down to 14%. You lost some inventory. What investment do you have right now where you're going to make 14% on anything? Even with a loss? Nothing. Well, then how smart are you? I just told you how to make money. You got any brains in your head, you'll figure it out real quick. Here's the paper, sign it. 4 months, you come back and get your check. And see, what it was a business transaction. I know that sounds bad, but business is done all the time like this. It's just business. And so in this business transaction, it's not being mean or ugly. It's like, what do you want? What are you really needing? If both of us get what we're after, then the final product is you will be satisfied. Now, if you steal from somebody or rob somebody, it works the opposite way. You get the deal, but the problem is when you meet them on the street 3 weeks later, what do you do? Man, you sold me that. Yeah, I'm sorry about that. No, in a good transaction, I'll show it to you in kind of stuff y'all do. Anybody on a cell phone? If you're on a cell phone, you are already in the business. Let me explain. When I remember having, Elise, when she bought her car, an actor alleged when her dad passed away, and one of the things he wanted her to have was a car. That was a big thing for him. So right before we got married and all of that, we went and bought an Acura Legend. And I thought, I had never seen anybody write a check for that much money in my life. I thought, you just can't afford. I'd never even been on an Acura parking lot. And to walk up there, and Elise knew what color she wanted. She knew what type she wanted. And she said, Tim, don't worry. The investment is worth it, because this car won't last 5 years, and this car won't last 4 years. This car, 12 years from now, will still be the same color. It won't fade. It has 22 coats of paint on it. It's not just sprayed and done. You're paying for what you're getting. But see, we see it as paying up front. And one of the things it came with I thought was so neat was a bag phone. I mean, this was back when, I'm dating myself a little bit, aren't I? I'm talking about it had a big old battery pack. And that thing would sit in the car, and you could plug it in. And you can unplug it because it had that big battery, and you could carry it around and tote it around. And you had that big old phone you could talk with. Oh, you were stymied. People would talk. They got a phone in their car. Now, the only problem was there wasn't no towers very few places. So you had to be in a big city to even talk to anybody. Because if you was on the Natchez Trace, you might not be able to use your phone. But that thing would pick up from a long ways away. It wasn't like a cell phone. You got to be right up next to the tower. It was. A phone. If they could make antennas that would still work like those phones, we'd be in good shape. You wouldn't be doing this in a building. You could stand in the middle of a building with that thing and talk. So here's what it was. A bag phone back then cost a lot of money. Because you bought the phone and then you could use it. Well, but the companies got smart. So here's what they did. They realize how your tendencies are. They know you can't say no. So when you went to the AT&T store, you didn't pay $300 for your phone. You didn't a lot of times pay $100 for your phone. You may have paid $199, $5, $20, maybe $40 for your phone. You didn't pay the regular price, because here was the deal. If you sign up for the plan, you get the phone for, you get a free phone. We're just going to give you this phone because we're going to send you this $50 bill every week, every month, because of you got a plan. And you walk around, I got a phone. No, you just did a business transaction. Now, you're happy if the phone, now if you go somewhere that phone doesn't work very good, are you a happy customer? No, somebody would look at you and say, why are you mad? You got the phone for free. Oh, you don't understand. They bill me every month. Oh, you get it now. A while ago you were talking about how free the phone, but now it won't work. Now you remind yourself of the bill. It works that way. And even if we were talking about something as simple as movies, you can go to a movie for $6, do a matinee for $5. How do they even make any money? I tell you how. When you walk up in there, they're going to check your pockets. They ain't going to let you bring no big bag in there with Cokes and tater chips and all that. I had to tell on Elise. Not me. But I had to tell Elise. Elise was bad because she had the purse. So it was her fault. Sometimes we, you know, go by and get a 16-ounce and stick it up in there. They don't check women's purses too. Anybody ever done that? Come on, let's be honest. You bought that 16-ounce, that 20-ounce, you stuck it in the bag. Because they're wanting to do a business transaction. They're saying, look, we're going to let you watch this brand new movie with 300 people get killed in this movie in 2 hours, and we're going to let you watch this movie for $5. Come on in. And right as you walk in, there's this big old counter. That movie's 2 hours long. I need some popcorn. And they don't just give you unsalted popcorn. They're going to give you heavy salt. You want some butter with that? Man, we're going to make sure your lips you get raw. It ain't good popcorn, but it's salted popcorn. I'll tell you, that stuff 2 weeks later, you can still eat it. Just set it on the counter. It won't go anywhere. It's salted like a ham. And so you can take that popcorn, you start eating it, man, your lips, you're like, I got to have something to drink. We'll give you the deal for $15. You get the big popcorn and the big Coke for just $15. And I look over to Lisa. I'm like, what are you going to drink? Oh, we got a 2-drink, 1 big popcorn special for $20. We leave the kids at home. Can't afford to take the kids to the movies. Because they've got a business transaction set up. And you got to get this mindset, because God is in the business transactions. See, we've messed it up a lot, and we keep thinking that, well, we get free salvation. We get free stuff. God's in a business transaction way. He says, if you'll come out from among them and be separate, I will be your God, and you will be my people. He says, if you want to be saved, here's what you got to do. You got to lay down your life and pick up my life. Don't you remember those scriptures? It talks about, if you're going to be my disciple, you must deny yourself, pick up your cross, and follow. Now, that's a lot of times not what we hear, because it's bad salesmanship. Bad salesmanship gives you a raw deal, and then when they meet you later, it's like, look, man, you sold me just a bunch of nothing. You kept telling me this thing is free. I came down the altar. I told God I was sorry for what I did. I went back to my life, and things hadn't got no better. Oh, well, I forgot to tell you, you're going to have to quit doing that. That's not what you said. You said it was free. Well, it is free. It didn't cost you. You don't have to die or anything. But you're going to have to walk away from what you used to be and follow Christ. And so God is in the business transaction. Always. Don't let anybody ever sell you some bill of goods. It's just like, it ain't going to cost you nothing. Oh, it always costs something. But the goal is that if I don't like what I am, then you can have all of it you want. That's what makes salvation beautiful. I didn't want no more of Tim Lott. I didn't want no more of my life. I didn't want to act this way no more. I didn't want to keep sneaking around no more. So when God said, Tim, you got to give me your life and I'll give you a new one, I was like, where do I sign? Tell me how quick I can give it to you. Tell me how quick I can put it in your hands. Because I don't like sleeping with it. I don't like thinking about it. Tim Lott's there in the morning. Tim Lott's there at night. He's there and bothering me during meals. Tim Lott's always my mind. Everything about me, I can't think straight. Tim Lott is about to ruin my life. I need Tim Lott dead and gone. If you can arrange that, I'll take your life for my life. Jesus would say it this way, until you learn to hate mother and brother and sister and father and mother and all of the kin folks and all the people, until you learn to deny yourself, you can't have no part of me. Not really. Now, don't get me wrong. You'd be a good Church of God person. You'd be a good Baptist. You'd be a good Methodist. You can be a good church person, but you ain't going to have no part of Him. Because of Him, there is a transaction that must be made. Now, I needed to say that before we work into this story. In this story, very simple story, there's a blind man. Go with me to the book of Mark, the 22nd verse. Now that I've kind of talked a little bit, we can get into this thing. Mark, the 22nd verse. And they came to Bethsaida, and they brought a blind man to Jesus and implored him to touch him. Taking the blind man by the hand, he brought him out of the village, and after spitting on his eyes and laying his hands on him, he asked him, "Do you see anything?" Now, this is so different than anything Jesus does normally. And it's a different story, because we hear the story all the time of blindness in the Bible, because there's a lot of times that's kind of used. I think it's a great symbol in the Bible, because we are blind to God and we're blind to our sins and we're blind. And so I think God, just like leprosy, something that's got us and it's going to destroy us and eat away at us, I think blindness also is a beautiful metaphor. And I believe that's why God used it so many times of blind people in the Bible. We have the man who was born blind, and the disciples asked, what did he do wrong? And Jesus said, he hadn't done anything wrong. Just the glory of God. It wanted to shine. And so God allowed this to happen for me one day to pass by and heal this man of blindness. We hear of blind Bartimaeus, who his story is unique because here he is sitting on the wayside. He's been there so long. And when he's sitting there, Jesus is passing by. And Bartimaeus has reached a point in his life and he says, I don't want to be blind anymore. I'm tired of being this way. I don't want to live like this anymore. I need something to change in my life. And he begins to holler and to scream out and to call out on Jesus. And others look around and say, be quiet. Quit bothering him. But there's something about when you are ready to change and you won't change in your life. It really doesn't matter what the person beside you thinks. It really doesn't matter if anybody else gets it or not. I won't change. I want things to change in my life. I want things to stop being the way they are. I want to sleep at night and not have to roll and toss. I want things different and I have to change. If something has to be done drastically, that's okay. And that story is beautiful. And Jesus calls him and asks him what he wants. And I want to see. And Jesus touches him and he receives his sight. But this story in itself is unique because this blind man who has one of the most common miracles that we hear about. But this one is different. This one is unique. Jesus is not looking to heal anybody. We don't even hear that the blind man himself is crying out or screaming. Not that he doesn't know he needs change. He knows I need change. But he's not doing anything drastic. He needs change, but it's a deeper change. We all like the people when we give altar calls that just boo-hooing and blubbering and they just come up to the altar. Man, you don't even have to worry about that one. You just lay hands on them and pray for them. They already forgiven before they walk out of the aisle. They are already, God had already been working on them halfway through the sermon, and by the time they were just waiting for you to give the altar call, I've just got been sitting there the whole time, and I'm telling you, God's been... And it's a wonderful thing. But it's those people that somebody brings. It's those people that, hey, I got a friend that I want you to talk to, Brother Lott. I got a buddy. I got a girlfriend, a boyfriend. They need the Lord. They need something changed in their life. And you look at them and you expect them to begin to tell you what's going on and they just kind of... They're right. It's different when somebody's brought. Because you're not sure, really sure, whether or not they even want genuine change. It's not that they know they don't need it, because they wouldn't have let somebody bring them if they couldn't have convinced them that something needs to change. I see wives or husbands do that all the time. You need to go to church with me. Why do I need to? Wait, look what you've been doing and look what you've been... Well, yeah, you're probably right. I do need to go. And so we drag them, but it doesn't mean that in their mind they actually desire change. It just means that they agree with us that things are not good, that things are not... This guy would not have argued with you that I'm blind. This guy would not have said, blind. What do you mean blind? What? I'm not blind. No, he would have said, I'm blind. Look, we have a man that's passing through. His name is Jesus. He's healed a bunch of blind people. You need to go. Well, I can't get that. We'll take you. If you want us to take you, we'll take you there personally. So the first step in this thing of bringing and telling someone and even being here this morning, the fact that this room is probably full of people that are here because your wife wanted you here. Or your husband wanted you here. Or, hey, we can get out for a little while. It's better than just sitting around. We don't have anything else better to do this morning. Let's go to church. Hey, we need church. We need to get us some church now. We ain't been to church in a while. Our family was always a little better when we went to church. And so we walk in with not the same amount of desire for change. So when the praise music is going on and everything's happening, we don't just boo-hoo and say, I'm me, that's me. No, we just kind of sit there very calmly like, you know, he said some good things. He's right on a lot of points. But don't you want to change? Well, yeah, I'd like it to change. But it ain't worth hollering about. It's not worth going to an altar. I'm not going to embarrass myself, if that's what you mean. I mean, I'd rather just stay with what I got than have to step out and actually be looked at and people staring at me. And you don't know what they do down there. I hear they got oil and powder, and they're going to powder you and oil you, and then you'll have to come back and look like a pot pie when you come out of there. You don't know what's going to happen. I'd do better if I just stay right here. I mean, change, that's drastic. It's drastic. But these friends, these people who notice this man's blindness, who care about this man's blindness, they bring him to Jesus. Three things I want you to see. Number one, that Jesus says nothing to him. Jesus says nothing to this man. I mean, you could think that the Word of God would say something. He would have said, "Are you ready to be healed?" He could have said, "Do you believe today is your day?" He could have said, "Do you have faith?" See, the hardest times in my life that I have with God are the times when He don't talk. Because if we were sitting there in that chair and God just kind of put His arm around you and said, "That's you He's talking about, dipstick." Then me? We would be, "Oh, I guess I need to go." "Yeah, I think you do." But it's those times when He doesn't say anything. It's those times I'm sitting there and I know things need to change, and I'm just waiting for that word, that powerful move that makes me go even if I don't want to go. And then all I get is a nudge. All I get is a inkling. All I get is just a, "You know, that's probably me." And Jesus, all He does is just reach out, grab the guy by the hand, and starts walking with him. Just starts walking, just dragging him behind him. Doesn't know where he's going, doesn't tell him where he's going, doesn't say, he may be going 10 miles. He may be going to carry him down to the water. He doesn't know where he's going. He just knows, "This guy's got my hand. I don't even know who's got my hand. I've never heard his voice. I've never even been around him. And all of a sudden, somebody that these guys, that my friends have faith in, has my hand, and he's dragging me along. And I don't hear anything. And I don't sense anything." And I'm going to tell you something in the Christian life. This ruins more people in their lives than anything else. They sit for 20 years or 10 years waiting for some great word of God. And people are like, "Do you ever hear God?" I've heard God a few times in my life, but most of the time in my life, it's just nudges. It's just bumps. It's just, "Hey, you need to..." And that's kind of, "I don't know if I need to do it. I don't know." Just do it. Just go ahead and jump off. It's just nudges. You know, you get married off of nudges. Nudges are powerful things. I dated a lot of girls. And then all of a sudden, one round in one corner, I get a, "Hey, never felt like that before." God didn't come down there in the middle of the night. "Tim, wake up." "Yes, Lord. Marry that girl." "Yes, Lord." "Did that happen to anybody?" "If it did, God bless you." It was just a nudge. It was just a, "You going to move to him? Lord, if you just say something. God, this could be a mistake." We take jobs off nudges. We make investments off nudges. Some of the greatest investors in the world, you'll ask them, "Why did you invest in that? Why did you..." "I don't know, I just had a hunch. I just felt like that was fixing the turn. I just felt like that was what I needed to do. I just felt like..." When you're following God, there's a lot of times it's just a feeling. It's just something grabbing your hand and just nudging you and saying, come. Not telling you, not asking you, just saying, I'm going this way. Would you like to go in? Well, I don't even know where that is. I can't see it. I'm blind. I don't even know where you're taking me. I'm used to staying right here. I'm used to this area and staying in this little square corner. And I'm used to doing church like this. And I don't like nudges. I don't like something different. I don't like change in my life. If you're going to ever have anything significant happen between you and God, you are going to have to learn to be movable. Look at the person beside you and ask them, are you movable? Now, we're not, like I said, I'm not talking about God coming down and waking you up in the middle of the night. I'm talking about, are you movable in the nudges? I'm talking about when you are fixing to get in the car, young person, and God nudges you. You don't hear an angel come down and say, don't get in the car. It's a nudge, and it says, something just don't feel right about that. You guys just go on without me. Well, you chicken? Call me what you want. I'm just telling you. Y'all be safe, be careful. I just don't need to be in there. Talking about when you date a certain person, young person, and you go with them, and all of a sudden you just know, okay, this relationship is asking for more than I need to give, and you get a nudge, and you keep praying. That's when you really do. You're praying, isn't it? I mean, God, just tell me what I need to do. Just tell. And God said, God, you just quit hitting me and tell me. My ribs are sore. If you all I need is one word, just yes or no. God, how hard is that? God, just give me a yes or no. And God goes, ugh. What is that? Does that mean yes? No? I don't. And learning to be movable with God is the key. Of all the qualities that I work at the hardest, it's not, quote, hearing His voice, but it's sensing His nudges. And when you become mature in Christ, it is the most powerful quality you have. It will choose friends for you. It'll tell you what cars to get in. It'll tell you when to be somewhere and when to leave somewhere. It will tell you nudges are the most powerful thing. It'll be in a room and somebody will start saying something about pastor, and all of a sudden a nudge hits you. You don't need to be listening to this junk. And you'll say, I got to go. Nudges are powerful things. And this guy, first off, had the ability that even though he doesn't hear his voice, he doesn't even know who this guy is, doesn't know anything about him, he just knows somebody grabbed me. Somebody grabbed my hand that somebody else has said could help me. And I am willing to allow him to move and to nudge me and to walk me. And Jesus takes him and the Bible says walks him outside of the village, where there's no more noise. There's no more distractions. He doesn't hear the ringing of other people's cans and them getting money dropped in theirs. Everything that he's familiar with is being taken away. And now he's in an uncomfortable place. He's in a place he's never been. He's in a situation he doesn't know the noises, and he's never stood outside of the village by himself. You can get killed out here not being able to see. A wild animal could get you out here. You don't go outside when you can't see. You don't just wander around. You could die. You could be killed. But here he is holding the hand of somebody in the middle of somewhere he's never been before. Number two, he leads him to unfamiliar territory. Listen to me. Listen to me very carefully. The ability to be led without explanation is the key to the greatest growth in your life. The ability to be led without explanation. Let me tell you the difference between a good kid and a bad kid. It's real simple. A good kid understands that the parent has their best interest in mind. They've settled that in their heart. And so therefore, if the parent says, I don't want you to go there, they may get mad. They may stick out their lip for a little while. But they will accept it. That's a good kid. A bad kid, because they have not settled the fact that the parent wants their best interest in mind, will always bombard you with the why. How come? Explain to me why I can't do. And as a parent, there's times when you just say, look, I just can't explain that to you. I'm just telling you, I just feel like you don't need to go there and you've got to trust me on this. I just feel like that guy is not any good for you, and I'm telling you, don't be left alone in the dark with that dude, because that dude is no good. I don't care how many flowers he bought you. I don't care how many times he said he loved you. I don't care. That's the difference between the two kids. One has settled in their heart, in their mind, that the parent has their best interest. And for some reason, this guy settles it in his heart that even though I'm in unfamiliar territory, and even though I don't even know who this is, I am settled in my heart that they must mean me good. And whatever they need, I don't care. I won't change in my life. I am here to see. I am here to not be blind. And I don't care where I have to go. I've never been here. I don't recognize these noises. I don't recognize what I'm going through. But I understand this much, that I'm settling as I'm being pulled along, that either I'm going to die on this thing or I'm going to succeed on this thing. There will come moments in your walk with Christ to where you have to settle the biggest issue. Is He really trying to do me good? Because all He keeps doing is taking friends away, and all He keeps doing is ruining my life, and He seems like He won't let me have a job, and it seems like everything's going wrong. And is God really for me, or is He trying to mess up my life? Maybe I just need to go back and do what I used to do. Then guess what? The children of Israel would understand you. They would say, why did He lead us out here in the desert? I mean, we don't even have water. And God would say, cut down a tree, give them water. And well, that's one thing. And a couple of days later, we don't have food. God would send food out of the sky. Well, that's one thing. And they never could settle in their life to just be quiet and let Him grab their hand and with a fire and a pillow of cloud, and all of a sudden just let Him lead them without saying a thing. When God got mad at them, what was He always mad about? The Bible said they began to murmur. Hang around people who like to run their mouths, and you will hang around people that will die in a desert. That's a God word there. You can take that one right to the bank. There are things that I do with people, have to deal with people. There are situations I have to go through. Do you think you're ever going to know all the details in that? Absolutely not, because I don't have that kind of character. Here's what you'll have to do. You'll have to be quiet and trust that I know what I'm doing. Yeah. You'll have to close your trap. And you'll have to trust that I know more than you know. That I got more information. That I know more details. And that I made the decision based on all the information that I have. The alternative is just a murmur. Don't worry, there'll be plenty of people around to help you do it. There's people that murmur about you. Because whatever sword you cut with, don't worry, it's going to cut you. But if you decide, I don't do that, I quietly follow being led where I'm led. And I don't understand it all the time. And I can't answer why all the time. And I can't give you all the details all the time. All I can tell you is, I just got somebody that's got a hold of my hand, and we're walking this thing out. And I've got to follow, and I don't know where it's leading. I'm in unfamiliar territory a lot of times. I'm in places I had never been before a lot of times. And all of a sudden, God says, don't say nothing. Just trust me. Keep walking. Stay in my steps. Listen to me. Follow my footsteps. Just stay here. Don't walk. Don't try to figure it out. My ways are not your ways. Just hang in there. And this guy has the ability that in the middle of all that's going on, he doesn't scream out in the middle, where are we going? Where are you taking me? I want to go back. He who leads him is quiet. And he quietly allows him to lead. He leads him outside the village. He leads him away from all the familiar things. He leads him to that place. And then number three. And let me just say it this way, number two. There are some things in your life that will not happen as long as you hang around certain people. There are certain things that will not happen in your life as long as you hang with certain people. It won't happen. God will not do the miracle in Bethsaida. He will not do what you want Him to do where you want Him to do it. He says you're either going to come out or it won't happen. You're going to have to change places, or you're going to have to change ways, or you're going to have to change circumstances. Number three. Jesus spits on His face. Now, I don't know any nice way to say this. Everything else is pretty explainable. He grabs Him by the hand. But I don't know any other way to go. I mean, I don't care if you're blind or not. There's some senses you have. And when you're standing there and all of a sudden you feel His breath on your face and you know He's looking right at you and you hear this sound, you know that can't be good. And then a second later, I ain't no nice way to say that. You hear it. You don't just hear it, you feel it as it sticks to your face and it sticks to your eyes. He just spit on me. He just spit in my face. That's all you can think. He drug me out here. I don't know where I'm at. I have no idea. I don't know where we're standing. I've never been here in my life. And He just spit in my face. Because there will come a moment in your life and in your Christian walk that when you desire change, change is a radical thing. Change is not a simple thing. Change is not an unpainful thing. Change is not something that you just fall into. Change is something that when it happens, you know it just happened. And nobody has to tell you it just happened. Here's our problem. None of us would let that happen. None of us would let that happen because we're not blind. See, if you've had something for long enough, or you've been somewhere long enough, then there comes a point in your life where you stop worrying about what anybody is going to say or anybody is going to think. You could care less. And see, really, the problem with us is that when they talk about America, they're right. We are a blessed people. If God heals us or not, it really doesn't matter. We got doctors. If it comes through or not, it's okay. If the job falls through, it's really not a big deal. I get unemployment. It'll be a little less than what I'm living on, but I'll survive. But there come points in your life. There come places in your life where you've tried everything and you've done everything and you've come to the conclusion, I need change. I need something to really, really change. And I really don't care anymore what I have to do to get change. That was the problem with the rich young ruler. The rich young ruler was not ready yet for change. Jesus knew this. He was not being ugly with the young man. He was not trying to run him off. He just knew, son, you're not ready for change. How do you know I'm not ready? Well, then do all that the law says to do. And do that and I've done that since I was a kid. I've been going to church since I was a kid. I know Jesus as well as anybody. I know church. I know this. I've been grown up in the church. I mean, you can't tell me nothing. Then only one thing you need to do. Just sell everything you got and follow me. Huh? Yeah, you won't change. Remember, you inside, you keep saying, I want to feel like I'm going to heaven. I want that. I want to know that I'm going to heaven. Well, if you want to know you're going to heaven, then let me go ahead and just cut through it and give it to you. Just sell everything you got. Just follow me and be my servant. And all of a sudden, you will know, because I got nothing else left. All I have is heaven. All I got is heaven. And in our lives, that's where we struggle so much. We won't change. The only problem is that if somebody spit on us, or if something happens that's not normal, it messes everything up about our life. Oh, let me see if I can bring it down. We won't change, but if changing may mean changing churches. I may have to change churches. You see, the church I go to may be dead. But you don't understand, Grandma's buried out in there, and if I leave that church, they're going to take away my funeral plot, and I won't have nowhere to be buried. Well, I'm sorry, you're going to have to make a decision. Do you want to live with God or die with Grandma? See, it's going to hurt sooner or later. Change is going to hurt sooner or later. It's just going to bob you up, and it's just going to go, I mean, can I have both of them? No. When you do radical change, it will change everything about what you do and everything about what you are. If you won't change, it may happen like this. It may mean the fact of, you know what, I may have to leave some old friends that I've had for a long time. But you don't understand, they've been my buddies. That's the problem. Look where you and your buddies have got you. You want something different, you might have to change. But you don't understand, that's my papa. Well, you're going to have to tell papa, I don't want to hang out with you no more. I'm talking about change. Change may look like this. I may have to change the environment. There's places I can't go and things I can't do. On a motorcycle trip, we got to go out to eat and got to meet, what was the guy's name? Morgan Freeman. We got to meet him at his restaurant. He's a real nice guy. Probably seen a lot of his movies. But afterwards, we all still, it's about 7 o'clock, we're hanging out. We're like, where do you go hang out around here? You know, it's Clarksdale, Mississippi. Where do you go? Well, the whole point is, if you're in Clarksdale, that's the blues capital of the world. So tell us where they're playing blues. So down on the other end of town, there's a little blues bar. So here we all go. Whole church group. And it's more like a restaurant. You walk into it, it serves food. Of course, it's got a bar like Applebee's or anything else would. It's got 2 pool tables. So we're standing at the back, we shoot pool, we're hanging out. And we're doing all this, you know, playing pool, listening to blues for a couple hours. Somebody was laughing. They said, I never thought I'd be going with a preacher to a bar. I said, you hang out, man. Ain't no telling what we get into. Environments have to change. But here's the thing. It doesn't bother me to go there. One of the waitresses or something got on the microphone. We got $2 beers. And I was thinking, unless it's root beer, I don't want it. See, I can be in the environment of some places and do that. And then there's some environments I can't be around. Now, if somebody had said, hey, let's go to some gentleman's club, I'd have said, uh-uh. I don't care if they're giving away free root beer. Why? Because there's some tendencies, there's some environments I know that I can't play with and can't toy with. I can hang out with some Christian friends and shoot pool. But there's some environments I cannot be in and cannot toy with, because I know where it's going to lead in my mind and in my life. Listen to me. You have to be wise enough to know what your kryptonite is. Look at the person beside you and say, I'm Superman. Or Supergirl, if you're a girl. You either Superman or Supergirl. There's things that don't bother you. You can look at some people, when you listen to the news and somebody got arrested for drugs and stuff, you're like, them folks are crazy. I mean, doing drugs and all that. To you, that's not your kryptonite. You think those people have lost their mind, but to them, they do fine until that buddy comes over and says, hey man, look what I got. They'll throw their whole life away. Because that's their kryptonite. They're Superman until that comes into the room. With me, I'm Superman until it's simply anything I can visually look at or anything visually as far as pornography, anything like that, I have to guard that because I have a photographic memory. And this photographic memory is a great blessing, but this photographic memory is a huge problem sometimes. I don't need to be staring at Cosmopolitan magazines because I can remember every picture, I can remember everything. We were on the bikes leaving, and this will kind of give it to you the best way I can describe it. We were on our bikes leaving Memphis, and we had to get out of the place where we were leaving, in the garage, the parking garage. And we stopped the bikes, and we was all waiting for all the people to get through the pay thing, and we were all leaving. And all of a sudden, two young ladies walk across. Don't ask me what they look like, because I turned my head fast. All I know, she had a blue dress. And that's all I can remember. All I know is when I saw the blue dress and another girl step off the counter, my head went like... You say, Pastor, you're married, you're a good, and I'm a great husband. My head turned, and I knew, I can tell you beyond a shadow of a doubt, did not play with that. Did not, did not do it. Why? Because I would still have that in my memory, right? Remember now, I have a photographic memory. Just in a blur, I can tell you she had a blue dress. In a blur. Before she ever stepped off the step, I could tell you that. And I knew, oh, whoa, whoa. See, some of you think you can play with kryptonite in your life and you keep wondering why you keep ending up still doing drugs. It's because, guess what? Drugs is your kryptonite. And until you realize if somebody does drugs, hangs around drugs, talks about drugs, anything, they can't be my friend. It isn't a matter of just hanging out with them. No, we don't need to hang out at all. You don't understand. It may not bother you. You may can take a hit and not need one for 2 weeks. If I take one, I'm going to go rob somebody's house. I'm going to do whatever I got to do. I'm going to get some more of it. That's the way I live. For some of us in here, it's simply when we start looking at things we don't need to, it leads us to affairs and it leads us to doing things we don't need to do. It leads us to hiding out in dark rooms, watching things we don't need to watch. That's our kryptonite. And everybody in here, it doesn't matter if it's your bad attitude. It doesn't matter if it's cheating, if it's lying. Some of you lie out of your teeth. You'd lie smiling to somebody. That's your kryptonite. If you can lie to get your way out of something, you'd lie. That's what you do. You are a liar. And that's your kryptonite. And you've got to realize, I'm Superman, but I cannot play with certain things. If it means change, and he's got to spit on your eye. Did you feel somebody just spit on you right then? You did, didn't you? Because I could tell some of you like, I don't know why he just said that. It made me so mad talking about it. You know why? It's because nobody likes to get spit on. And when Jesus looked at that guy that day, he spat right in his face. How much kryptonite do you think that bothered him? If I had been in his situation, I think I know what he's thinking. Because there's lines you draw in your life when you're hurting. And there's lines you draw and you say, I'll take everything, but they better not do. Nobody better say something about my mama. I've met people like that. Man, you can cuss them out, call them whatever you want to, but if you said your mama, man, they'd jump all over you. And I thought, dude, I've been calling your names for 4 minutes. Yeah, but you don't go there. I believe this guy, you know what? I may be blind, but ain't nobody going to make fun of me. Nobody's going to pick on me. And here's somebody that drug him out of where he's never been and spit right on his face. He ain't even said a word to him. He don't even know who it is that spit on him. It may mean I have to worship different. It may mean maybe a different denomination. It may mean coming out of what doesn't work. Change is tough. But I want to tell you something about change. You say, Brother Lott, does it ever get better? Immediately after. Because when you read those scriptures, here's what always happens in your life. When we're willing to let God change us, immediately following, He always touches us. As soon as Jesus spat on him, Jesus took his hands and laid them on him. I don't know how to explain this, Roxy. But there are times as I walk through this Christian walk, I don't hear a voice. I just feel nudges. And as I feel those nudges, I walk through and I wonder sometimes, God, do you even know my name? Do you even know I'm here? Do you even care? Do you even see what I'm going through? Do you see how the kids are acting? Do you see how my husband, my wife? Do you see my job? God, do you see any of this? Do you even care about any of this? Do you know how hard I'm struggling? You know what the doctor just told me 2 days ago? He told me I'm not going to make it. Do you know what I'm going through, God? Do you have any idea? And God doesn't say anything. He just grabs the hand and he starts moving it. And all of a sudden you're thinking, well, it's going to be something good. It's going to possibly be something good. And all of a sudden there comes that spit moment. That last straw. That's it. Henry and Tanya just had their second little baby. Now, really, having the baby is not a big thing. But it's the process of getting to that. See, Tanya and Henry had twins many years ago. A lot of people don't know this. They had twins and one of them died. And they almost lost Nikki. That was a spit moment. That's where I don't understand and... Okay, God, if you're not going to do anything, we'll just have to take care of ourselves. And when I met Tanya and Henry, they were a wonderful couple. But if you mentioned having a child or mentioned, man, don't even talk like that. You don't understand what I've been through. But it's amazing how when God, after He does the one, if we allow Him, He always touches us. And that baby that they hold now is not just a baby. That is a touch moment. That's a moment that tells Henry and Tanya, I was there. I was there through the first ones that were born. I was there through all the surgery. I was there through all the times when you didn't know that I was there. I was there when you thought I didn't love you. I was there and I still had a plan for you even beyond anything you could picture. Listen to me about change. Change is something that requires something from us. It requires the ability to allow Him in silence and in no noise and in quietness to do what He's going to do and trust Him anyway. That blind man that day had more ability than a lot of people. The stories you read in the Bible, the great ones, are from those Canaanite women that when Jesus tells her, look, I can't give bread to the dogs. And she takes that spit right in the face and she turns around and says, but Lord, even the dogs get the crumbs. She takes the spit and she waits for the touch. When the doctor says your kidneys are shut down and it doesn't look good, we take the spit and we wait for the touch. Some of you in this room today, you have went through the low point in your life. Some of you have gone through the point where it feels like God is spit in my face. That's true, but don't worry. If you hang in there, you'll also receive the touch. And the touch is what sets you free, and the touch is what brings the miracle, and the touch is what changes everything about everything you think you got figured out. That guy had no idea that he was going to be drug out of town. He had no idea somebody was going to spit on his face. All he knew was at the end he was supposed to receive his sight. If you're in this room today, listen to this preacher. I don't wake up every day of my life and hear voices. I don't wake up every day and God's just sitting there, hey Tim, let's go eat at McDonald's today. A lot of times I'm sitting there at 11 o'clock and there's a nudge and it says, hey, I don't know, I just feel like I need to go to Santa Fe today. I don't know why I want to go there. I just feel like, when I get there, two waitresses are sitting there, man, we wanted to talk to you today. We are so glad. You got 5 or 10 minutes? And I'm thinking, okay, God, I get it. It's the nudges in your life. It's the kid that's sitting two chairs away, and you're thinking, I don't even know that kid. Just go up. Ask them how they're doing. I don't know. I ain't going over bother. It's the nudges in life. I wonder how many school massacres and shootings and things that if a good Christian person had just... You don't think God was nudging somebody? You don't think God was moving on somebody? Somebody God was trying to nudge. Next week, what's going to happen in your life is you may not hear this clear voice. But I promise you this much. You will feel the nudge. You will sense the presence. And you can sit there and say, well, just tell me, God. Just give me the voice. Or you can say, I just feel like I got to do that. I just feel like I got to do that. With every head bowed. Father,